Imagine a maintenance log with over 1,000 entries, each one a hole patched, a shrapnel scar welded closed, a flak strike documented, repaired and cleared for another mission. We are not talking about a fleet of airplanes. We are talking about one airplane, serial number 41-31773. A Martin B-26B Marauder, and by the time the war in Europe was over, that airplane had flown 207 combat missions, more than any other American aircraft in the entire European theater of operations. Her name was Flak Bait. I'm Taildragger, and this is the Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair. We've got a story worth sitting down for. Before we get into it, today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, to understand what Flak Bait means, you have to understand what the B-26 Marauder was. And to understand the Marauder, you have to start with the reputation it had before it earned a better one. The Glenn L. Martin Company built the B-26 fast. The Army Air Corps put out the specification in 1939, Martin won the contract, and the airplane went from drawing board to first flight in under 2 years. That was impressive. But speed of development came with consequences. The B-26 was designed around high wing loading, a relatively small wing for a medium bomber of its weight. The idea was speed, and the airplane was fast, around 315 miles per hour at altitude, faster than a lot of the fighters trying to catch it. But that small wing meant high stall speeds, aggressive approach speeds, and a runway appetite that was genuinely unforgiving. Early crews called it the Widowmaker at MacDill Field in Florida, where crews trained on the thing. Accidents piled up fast. There was a grim joke that you could walk from Tampa to Orlando on B-26 wreckage. Some historians have questioned whether the joke was fair. The statistics are murkier than the legend, but the reputation stuck, and for a time there were serious conversations in Washington about canceling the program entirely. A committee led by General James Doolittle, yes, that Doolittle, looked at the aircraft and the accident numbers and made a judgment call. The B-26 was salvageable. The problem was training, not the airplane. Crews needed to fly it right, and flying it right meant respecting exactly what it demanded. You flew the B-26 on the numbers, exactly on the numbers. You did not get sloppy on final approach. You did not let airspeed bleed off on a go-around. The airplane would bite you the moment you gave it a reason to. Once the training doctrine caught up with the aircraft, something remarkable happened. The B-26 became, by the end of the war, the American bomber with the lowest loss rate per sortie in the European theater. Lower than the B-17, lower than the B-24. The Widowmaker turned out to be one of the safer ways to go to war, if you knew how to fly it. Flak Bait arrived in England in the spring of 1943. She was assigned to the 449th Bombardment Squadron of the 322nd Bombardment Group, 9th Air Force. Her primary pilot was First Lieutenant James J. Farrell, though over 207 missions, plenty of other hands flew her. She was named after the crew's dog, a little dog named Flak. Whether anyone thought that was funny at the time, I couldn't say. The 322nd flew low-level missions first, and it nearly destroyed them. In May of 1943, the group launched a raid on German airfields in the Netherlands, coming in at treetop level trying to get under radar coverage. The Flak was waiting. In two missions, the group lost aircraft at a rate that ranked among the worst single raid losses in the entire American bomber campaign, by percentage. It was a disaster, and the men who flew it knew it while it was happening. After those missions, the B-26 groups shifted to medium altitude, 12 to 15,000 feet, tight formation, fighter escort when they could get it. And from there, the Marauder groups found their stride. They flew against marshalling yards, oil refineries, V-weapon launch sites across France, bridges, ammunition depots. They flew tactical missions ahead of ground advances in ways the heavy bombers were not suited for. The B-26 became the workhorse of the 9th Air Force's medium bombardment operation, reliable, hard-hitting, and fast enough to give German interceptors a difficult problem. Through all of it, Flak Bait kept flying. 207 missions. Let me put that in some kind of human context. A combat tour for a heavy bomber crew was 25 missions early in the war. That number was raised to 35, then eventually to 50, as the Allies gained air superiority over Europe. Even at 50 missions, you had earned your way home. Flak Bait flew 207. That is not one crew. That is not two crews. Multiple crews flew her across multiple tours, in and out of occupied Europe, through all kinds of weather, against all kinds of opposition. She took flak hits over France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany. By the end, maintenance records documented over 1,000 individual flak and bullet holes that had been patched. Some of the patchwork you can still see on the skin today, little fabric patches over metal, repairs done fast between missions, because there was another mission tomorrow, and the day after that, and the week after that. Now here's where it gets interesting, or maybe where it gets poignant, depending on your outlook. When the war ended, Flak Bate was in rough shape. She had earned it. The Army Air Forces brought her back to the United States, and eventually she ended up in the hands of what would become the National Air and Space Museum. For decades, she sat in storage. A significant piece of history, acknowledged as such, but not on full display. Only the nose section was restored and put out where people could see it, at the main museum building on the Mall in Washington, D.C. A lot of visitors walked past that nose section without fully understanding what they were looking at. The Smithsonian knew what they had. They knew the full story. But a full restoration of a complete World War II bomber is not a small undertaking, and the resources, the space, and the skilled hands required to do it right do not appear overnight.
The Stephen F. Odvar Hazy Center in Chantilly, Virginia, out near Dulles, is where the Smithsonian's serious restoration work happens. That is where Flak Bate's airframe sections have been brought together for what is shaping up to be one of the most significant warbird restoration projects in American museum history. The team working on Flak Bate is dealing with the kind of challenge that keeps restoration specialists up at night. This is not an airplane that was carefully preserved in a climate-controlled hangar for decades. She is a combat veteran, full stop. She has stress in her airframe that no engineer in 1943 anticipated when he drew her up. She has repairs layered on top of repairs, material from multiple production runs, field modifications applied fast and documented loosely, sorting out what is original, what was a wartime field fix, and what is 80 years of storage damage is its own branch of historical detective work. The B-26 also presents specific structural challenges. That small wing, the thing that made her the Widowmaker in training and the survivor in combat, generates high loads on the spar and the fuselage attachment points. After 8 decades, those structures need careful evaluation. Not every original component can be saved. Some has to be manufactured from scratch, using period drawings when they exist, reverse engineered from surviving parts when they do not. The Smithsonian has been transparent about the timeline, which is honest of them. This is a multi-year project, possibly a decade or more before the full aircraft stands on public display. That is not a failure of ambition. That is what proper restoration actually requires. You do not rush a job like this and claim you respected it. There is a philosophy in warbird restoration that splits the community, and I will tell you where I come down on it. One camp wants these airplanes flying, engines running, gear cycling, a living piece of history that people can feel and smell and hear. The other camp argues that every flight hour, every landing, every control input puts irreplaceable stress on a structure that cannot be duplicated. That 30 years from now, there will not be another Flak Bate to restore, because we flew this one to pieces.
Flak Bate settles that argument without anyone having to have it. She flew 207 combat missions. She is retired. What the Smithsonian is doing is not making her fly again. They are making her comprehensible again, putting her back together so a kid walking into Odvar Hazy 20 years from now can stand next to the full airplane, read the crew names, count the mission markers painted on the nose, and understand in their bones what kind of machine this was and what kind of men kept her going. That is its own form of respect. I think about what it must have been like to be a crew chief on that airplane, to watch her come back from mission 150, 160, 170, to count the new holes, get your crew moving before the sun came up, and send her out again in the morning. There is a kind of faith in machinery that a good crew chief develops. You know how the airplane talks to you. You know when she is right and when she is not. 207 missions in, that crew chief knew Flak Bate in a way that goes beyond mechanical. The names on those maintenance logs are part of the story too. We remember the pilots, we remember the aircrew, the crew chiefs and the line mechanics, the men who kept the engines turning over in the cold English mornings. They are in the history books as footnotes if they are in them at all. The restoration at Odvar Hazy is, in its quiet way, a monument to them as much as anyone. The Martin B-26 Marauder never got the cultural recognition the B-17 Flying Fortress got. The B-17 had the publicity machine, it had Hollywood. The B-26 flew under the radar, figuratively speaking, despite flying over it in the most literal sense for 207 missions. But ask any serious student of the air war in Europe, and they will tell you the medium bomb groups were critical to Allied victory in ways that tend to get overshadowed.
The work they did in the weeks before D-Day, hitting the rail lines and bridges and marshalling yards across France, the transportation plan the planners called it, that work isolated the Normandy beachhead from German reinforcement in ways that mattered enormously on June 6th and in the weeks that followed. The B-26s were central to that campaign.
Flak Bait was part of that. She was over France and Belgium before the invasion, during it and after it. 207 missions is not a number. It is a chronicle. The nose section is on display at the main National Air and Space Museum building on the Mall. If you're ever in Washington, stand next to it. Look at the patchwork in the aluminum skin, read the mission tally. And remember that there are hundreds more of those patches on the rest of the airplane sitting in Chantilly, waiting to be seen whole again. Sources for this story come from the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum's documentation on the Flak Bait Project, the official history of the 322nd Bombardment Group, and Robert Dorr's research on the B-26 Marauder. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Taildragger. The sky doesn't forget the ones who flew it hard.